3.5 billion years. That's the time it took from the moment the first primitive life forms developed in the sea until Hugo Osior phoned me one Saturday night in July. "Have you seen the weather report for next week?" he asked. We'd been waiting a long time for a very specific forecast. Not sunshine or heat, not even the absence of rain. What we needed was the least possible wind in the seas between Boda and Lofoten, or to be more precise, in Vestfjorden, the western fjord. If you need calm waters in Vestfjorden, you better not be in a rush. Its tumultuous waters are notoriously temperamental. Even the slightest gust of wind from the west, south, or north can create significant waves. I'd checked the weather reports for weeks. The forecast was always for strong or gale-force winds. Never just a gentle breeze or light air, which would give us the calm seas we needed. Eventually, I'd pretty much given up keeping track and surrendered to Oslo's lazy summertime rhythm of hot days and bright nights. I was at a lively dinner party when my phone rang. When I saw the call was from Hugo, a man who hates phones and only rings to deliver important messages, I knew that our long wait had come to an end. We were finally going to try to catch the big fish. "I'll buy a plane ticket tomorrow and arrive in Boda Monday afternoon," I told him. "Good. See you." Click. On the plane to Boda, I fixed my gaze on the land below. Through the oval window, I could see mountains, forests, and plains, which I imagined as a raised seabed. A couple of billion years ago, the entire Earth was covered with water, except maybe for a few small islands here and there. Even today, the ocean still makes up more than 70% of the Earth's surface. It has been said that our planet's name shouldn't be Earth. Instead, it would be more appropriate to call it Ocean. When we reached Helgeland, the land opened into Norway's majestic fjords, with swelling seas to the west, until finally the division between sky and water dissolved, and the horizon became a shining gray color reminiscent of bird feathers. Every time I leave Oslo and travel north, I have the same sense of escape. Escape from the inland and its anthills, spruce trees, rivers, freshwater lakes, and gurgling marshes. Goodbye and farewell. I'm going out to the sea, which is free and endless, rhythmic and swaying like the old sea shanties sung across the oceans of the world on ships traveling to classic harbors like Marseille, Liverpool, Singapore, and Montevideo, while the deckhands hauled on the lines to set, trim, or reef the sails. Sailors who have gone ashore can seem like restless visitors. They may never go to sea again, but judging by their talk and gestures, it's as if they're merely temporary visitors on dry land. They never lose their longing for the water. Yet the sea, which is calling them, has to settle for hopeful, if uncertain, replies. My great-great-grandfather must have felt the sea's mysterious pull when he left inland Sweden and began walking west. Through valleys and over mountains, he traveled like a salmon along the great rivers, first against the stream, then with the stream, until he made it all the way to the sea. As the story goes, he gave no reason for the journey other than that he had to see the ocean with his own eyes. It's unlikely he had any plans to go back to where he'd come from. Maybe he couldn't stand the thought of spending the rest of his life stooping over barren patches of land in a Swedish mountain village. Clearly, he was an impulsive man, a dreamer, with strong legs. He wandered all the way to the Norwegian coast, started a family, and then joined the crew of a freighter. A couple of years later, as fate would have it, the ship sank somewhere in the Pacific. Everyone on board drowned. As if the man had come from the depths of the sea and needed to return. As if that was where he belonged, and he'd always known it. At least, that's how I think of him.